Hi, this is Julie Hyde, and welcome to the Making Account podcast, a podcast that is dedicated to business owners and leaders to inspire you to make it count in all areas of your life. I'll be sharing insights and interviewing some fantastic people who are creating their success and just getting out there and making things happen. And I hope by listening that you will get some great ideas that you can implement to start creating that ripple effect of change that you want to see and enable you to make what you do count even more. With me on the podcast today, I have Rob Rankin. Now, Rob is a rare breed. He's an innovative, socially conscious entrepreneur that has created a national virtual law firm, which has its primary purpose to be a force for good. This firm has more than doubled in size in the last 12 months, and its growth shows no signs of abating. Rob began his career in intellectual property law in the pharmaceutical industry. He then moved into commercial law as a partner in a traditional Melbourne-based firm. Rob soon got restless, recognising that there had to be a better, more healthy way to practice law and generate better outcomes for clients. So unable to convince his fellow partners to move away from the arcane way law was practiced, he started his own boutique practice, Rankin Business Lawyers. Now, the firm was built on the principle that if we create an amazing experience for the lawyers, they will in turn create an amazing experience for his clients. So creating that amazing experience for lawyers includes empowering them to work autonomously and flexibly through the very clever use of technology. Now, Rankin is also a certified B Corporation. So Rob is committed to running the business as a force for good. And Rankin believes in creating the type of world that all of our employees want to live in. So the firm's approach was recognized by Forbes magazine in its Best for the World Workers 2018 honoree list. Now, we talk about disruption, creating a 21st century cultural and workplace, the benefits and challenges of this, and what small and medium business owners should be thinking about to protect their business in a rapidly changing world. Now, I know you're going to love this one, so sit back and relax and enjoy listening to Rob. Rob Rankin, I have been super keen to speak with you on the podcast. You have a really interesting past before becoming a lawyer in the first place and then starting up Rankin Business Lawyers, which you did now 4 years ago. You started with just you.
That's right.
And now you have a team of 22 people, which is incredible. And I was really keen to talk to you today and shine some light on your very 21st century business model, which is so unconventional for the law industry, and also quite reflective of who you are, because I think you're the most unlawyer lawyer that I've ever met, which is a good thing and certainly does work for you. And I'm really interested in understanding the culture that you've created at Rankin & Co. and also the work that you do with small and medium business owners in terms of protecting their business and also helping them grow their business. So shall we jump into it?
Sure thing.
All right. So as I said before, you've got a really interesting past before you did become a lawyer. So I was just wondering, what did you want to be when you grew up, Rob?
What did I want to be when I grew up? I think I wanted to be an astronaut. most little kids do. I was a maths and physics kid in high school. And then did computer science straight after high school, and then a bit of a journey via some Greek islands and a, you know, global roaming hospitality career before I became a lawyer.
Mm. Amazing. So you have absolutely thrown a rock at that traditional law firm practice, which you did work in before you started your own business, and you've created something very 21st century in terms of your business model. So can you tell us a little bit more about that and what led you to creating what you have now?
Yep, sure. So as you said, a few years ago I was a partner in a very traditional law firm. We had the beige partitions, the charcoal suits, the black European sports cars. We build 6-minute units. It was a one-size-fits-all pricing strategy, even though our clients ranged from large privately held businesses that might turn over hundreds of millions of dollars down to, you know, a guy with a laptop and a very tight budget. So there are a few issues with the model. We're a successful law practice, but I didn't think that we were really contributing anything to, beyond the basic provision of legal services, and I wanted to do things a bit differently.
Mm.
My circumstances were my wife at the time was pregnant with our second child. I turned 40, so it might have been some sort of midlife crisis. But really, I was looking to increase the autonomy and flexibility I enjoyed as a principal in a law firm, and really get away from, you know, the things we don't like about working in offices, the fixed hours, the perhaps stale environment, and change things up a bit.
Yeah. So your team basically dictate their own working hours, as long as they obviously fulfill a function for you, but they can really make their own, I suppose, role work for them as part of your business. So how have you structured that?
Yep, sure. So we've set up the business essentially as a virtual workplace. So we don't have a bricks and mortar office. We do have lawyers on the ground in Sydney, Brisbane and Melbourne. For going out to visit clients and attending court, we might act like fairly typical lawyers. But as you've alluded, our lawyers get to do it on their terms. Mm. So while we might not have expectations that people are at their desks at 9 a.m. hammering away at their keyboards, what we do expect is our lawyers will work with their colleagues, with their clients, to manage and meet the expectations of the job. We try to work flexibly with our team, but also work flexibly with our clients. If that means going out and working from their premises, that's really, you know, easy for us to do. There are a lot of benefits both for a legal practitioner and the client for a visit to the factory floor or the retail shop or coming out to your office and, you know, really understanding more about your business and how you work. And we find it's a better engagement. Our business is very relationship focused. And if you're genuine about building relationships with your clients, then you need to invest, invest the time and the energy in that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And of course, people are looking for convenience now, and it's to come and see a lawyer. It is time out of their day. It's expense with parking even, and then you're sitting there through the meeting, whereas where you're getting out and seeing the clients, you're appreciating their environment, you're understanding their demands, and just making it easy for them to do business with you, which I think is also what you're doing for your employees, because you're making it easy for people to work with you if they buy into your culture and your business ethos, and, you know, it's a win-win for everyone, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And the technology makes it very easy these days. You know, your laptops last all day. There's, ubiquitous Wi-Fi. Like you said, if we go out to, we have clients in manufacturing, it might be out Campbellfield, Brayside, for them to take a trip into town to visit their lawyer, that might be half a day or a day out of their calendar. And then you might only get the CEO and the CFO, for example. Whereas if we go out to the factory, we can talk to those roles. We can also talk to the HR manager. We might talk to, just walking across the factory floor, one of our employment lawyers might identify some issues that can really help the business there too.
So. Yeah. So I know you're very passionate. You touched on before about having a totally engaged and flexible and happy lawyers. So I know that's something that you espouse on your website, but I know it's something that you are very passionate about. And I know you work really hard to provide an environment that supports that, and you provide some amazing benefits to your team. So can you tell us why culture is so important for you, I suppose, besides the obvious? Yeah.
Sure. For those of those people who don't know the legal industry, we do typically top the charts in all those awful criteria of anxiety and depression, suicide. We have massive rates of dropout in our profession. It's you know, working in a traditional, you know, big city law firm, the lifestyle is not conducive to, you know, work-life balance or harmony or any of that sort of thing. We have lots of females leave the profession, in, you know, their sort of early to mid thirties when they go off to have families and they don't come back because, you know, they see it for what it is. And, so they're, yeah, it's unfortunate that's the case. Really, I built this, you know, this model and this law firm to suit me. And it happens to suit a bunch of other, lawyers as well. And really, that's how the business has grown.
Mm.
I created an ideal environment, an ideal job for Rob the lawyer.
Mm.
And it happens to suit a bunch of other people.
Yeah. Cause there's a real, I know you love having fun and I know you still really enjoy that team aspect. So you get the team together quite often. You celebrate birthdays. You celebrate many things, engagements, yeah, well, weddings,
yeah.
Whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And I know you get the team together often and you also like provide these perks where they can just go off and work somewhere around a pool for a day or something if that's what they want to do. So,
yeah. Well, having the, you know, there are lots of benefits to having a virtual workplace and, you know, you mentioned cost saving and, you know, efficiencies and those sorts of things.
Mm.
But it's really important, you know, again, for the engagement of our team, for enjoyment in their roles to be part of a team
mm.
and to really foster that, you know, that collegiate environment.
Mm.
There are other, you know, sort of law business models out there that are, you know, sort of contractor models where people are brought in to do piecemeal jobs.
Mm.
What we've tried to preserve is that real team cohesion.
Yeah.
We've done that by, as you said before, really emphasising the, you know, the opportunities to get together. So yeah. Monday morning we have our team morning. The team in Melbourne meet in one cafe, the team in Sydney meet in another, team in Brisbane meet in another. We do a big video link up. Technically, it's, you know, reasonably complicated,
yeah.
But essentially we're all in the room.
Yeah.
And while we have an agenda for that meeting and we run through, you know, the week ahead and new client matters and all those sort of legal business things, we do a lot of water cooler stuff and,
mm.
you know, who got married on the weekend, who sold their dog, who, you know, whatever. It's a really great opportunity for everyone just to touch base. And
mm.
Also, the way we've structured the business, there's a so we're an incorporated law practice with a profit share model,
mm.
And the profit share, a large part of the way it's set up is to encourage lawyers to work collaboratively and to share work and to share client relationships.
Mm.
So rather than, you know, a typical firm might run into problems where, you know, they have this sort of siloed mentality where, you know, us against them, even within the same law firm,
mm.
Our model it really encourages the sharing and the collaboration. So,
yeah,
it's important.
That is important, yeah. For sure. So the importance of, and I know a lot of people will be thinking about this because I often think about it when I read about amazing cultures like you have, the importance of recruiting the right people into the business. And I think there's a lot of, you know, that's a critical component to the success of bringing your culture to fruition. Obviously, that would be an important component to the success of your business model.
Yep, absolutely. Two things I'd say about that. One is my philosophy with recruitment is always be recruiting.
Mm.
Always be looking for good mm. people. And I'd much rather hire a great person that I don't necessarily have a job for yet. Provided they're on board for that challenge,
yep.
And help, you know, build the role around them,
yeah.
Then sit back and wait for gaps in the organisation and then try and find someone to fill that gap. I think, you know, if you have the opportunity and you find good people, you know, that's really key and you need to, offer them the opportunity, when they're ready.
Yeah.
The other thing is because our model's a bit different and we are different to other law firms, there's a self-selection element to the team we built. People mm. who have joined our firm have joined because they like the way we work. They want to work with us.
Mm.
Again, in my experience in past firms, some lawyers would join just because we were a law firm and they were a lawyer.
Mm.
And then the matchmaking didn't really go much beyond that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, can lead to, you know, issues down the track. I think in this day and age, there's a lot more awareness around, you know, the importance of, I guess, personalities and cultural fit and all that sort of thing.
Yep.
But I don't think you can overemphasize it.
No, definitely. And I think with the younger generation coming through, who are a lot more savvy in understanding what they want in a workplace and what needs to meet their needs, as opposed to it being the other way, it's really challenged us as leaders to be better in that space.
One thing I'd say about that is, we set up this firm 4 years ago, and we have our model, we think it works really well, and in our experience to date, it does.
Mm.
But the minute you think you have it worked out and you're not willing to listen to, what your team or what your clients or what other people want, then I think you're headed for trouble. You always need to be listening, for those opportunities when people tell you that you don't know everything.
Yeah.
A great example, we have a law student who's part of our team. And a big thing in the idea behind our law firm is we're not a typical pyramid structure, that professional services with the senior people at the top and the right down to the graduates at the bottom. All of our lawyers are relatively senior. You need to be to enjoy the autonomy and flexibility that our model offers. Mm. So we said, okay, well, we don't really have jobs for law students. Byron joined our team. He's definitely one out of the box, and he's essentially carved a role for himself in the firm. Through us identifying opportunities for him and the team to benefit. So mm-hmm. even though we said, we know best, he managed to convince us that perhaps we didn't and make an exception, and that's been fantastic.
Yeah. That's such a great story. Mm. And it's just testament to, small business being agile and flexible enough to be able to just create that opportunity for a Byron, which is great. Yeah. Yeah. So do you think, in your opinion, that an existing business could create a culture similar to yours? Say if a business had been going for 10 years or something like that, to 10 years.
You mean going to a virtual workplace and ditching the office?
That virtual model, but also the culture that you have, which I think takes a really, as you say, people self-select into that. Yep. So it is a specific mindset for people to really enjoy a culture, but also be willing to put in the work as well. So I think that's a big question on business owners' minds. It's like, how do we get that to work?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, from our perspective, there's definitely been advantages to starting small, and doing the virtual office from day one, or the virtual workplace from day one. There are, issues, whether they're, communications, tech, process issues. And the advantage of starting small is you get to solve those problems on a small scale. Mm. And then as your business grows, you just incorporate the solutions you've developed. Whereas if you took a typical 100 person professional services business and ditched the office, then everything from the computers and the software platform that you're using, the way people communicate with each other, all those things would need to be changed up and tested. The people aspect, there will be people in a 100 person organisation who can't work from home, don't want to work from home, can't cope with the idea of not having a corner office with babies to go to or whatever it is. So I think there's a real challenge. I don't think it's impossible. Lots of businesses have great culture. Lots of employees are on board to help help the business do whatever needs to be done. This trend we have today for the gig economy, co-working spaces, on-demand services, all that sort of thing, really, I think it's there wouldn't be surprises or a lot of surprises for a business doing that. There's just practical problems that would need to be solved.
Yeah, and obviously there's an element or a huge element of trust that's built between you and the employee that you trust them to do the job that they're tasked to do.
I had a sit down with some partners of another law firm. We're always talking to other law firms about how we might help each other and cooperate. And these guys were from a very traditional law firm, and they said, "Well, if everyone's spread all over the place and working from a cafe or from home, how do you know if they're actually working?"
Yeah.
And I looked him in the eye and I said, oh, we employ adults. Got a bit wry smile and a bit of a nod. But, you know, the reality is, you do have to have that trust. Mm. But I think, you know, again, if you put that trust in good people, then, you know, it's, you know, you get the return. So, yeah. I think a lot of businesses, you know, if you start from a place of mistrust, and we have to, you know, monitor their Facebook use and all this sort of thing and talk about your employees as an us and them, then, you know, you're going to create problems or manifest that sort of attitude.
Yeah, I think you've lost the game already there.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. Okay, Rob, so from your experience, what do you think is really important for small business owners to be aware of and to protect their business from in a really rapidly changing marketplace?
So as lawyers, we're, you know, fairly risk conscious and fairly conservative. So we're always looking at, you know, things in our business and our clients' businesses that need to be protected. I think, you know, one key element we always look at with new clients is around their employees. You need to, you know, protect your employees with good contracts, policies, and procedures. And you also need to protect your clients and your own business from the risks inherent in that kind of arrangement. So, employee engagement is a key area that the risk needs to be well managed.
Yeah.
Intellectual property is another area where most businesses these days, have some valuable intellectual property. Whether you're a creative business and you create things like copyright material or designs, or if it's just your brand and your trademark that you need to protect. The world's so connected now. Every business has an online element. Everyone's susceptible to the threats. To their intellectual property and having the value diluted or people, you know, stealing, whether it's, you know, traffic or ideas or whatever. So,
And you have a retainer type arrangement for small business, which can definitely assist with cash flow and also enabling them to pick up the phone and speak to you on a needs basis, because you talked about employment law before and, you know, the people space can be a really big challenge. Can you talk a little bit about that retainer arrangement that you have?
Yeah, sure. So a big thing in our industry for legal services across the board is price certainty. That's really where there's a lot of complaints about our industry. You know, we didn't know how much it was going to cost. We didn't realise that the clock was running and we're already, you know, racking up costs. What we try to do for our clients is provide a lot of certainty in that regard. About 90% of our work these days is done on a fixed fee basis. We work with our clients to scope the job, provide a quote, and then deliver the services for that price. The retainer model we have in place with some clients is an extension of that, where we work with the client to establish their range of needs, the costs often across a 12-month period, but it can be any period really, and then spread the cost across a fixed monthly fee arrangement. Mm. And like you say, with our emphasis on relationship, that just means that the HR manager can pick up the phone to one of our lawyers without checking if it's in the budget.
Yeah.
The operations guy, before he just signs off on that supplier contract that they've put in front of him, it's no additional cost to him to run that by the lawyers first, which to manage those sorts of risks is really useful for a lot of businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. Because from that cost component, there can be a real reluctance to approach until it gets to the stage of need and where it can often be too late, and then you're coming into, save mode rather than protect mode.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot more value in using lawyers, proactively or preemptively. Prevention's better than cure. If we put a suite of employment contracts and policies and procedures in place, we know we're going to minimise the risk of unfair dismissal claims. If you don't have those things in place, then you're going to be spending money on lawyers every time you need to put out a fire.
Absolutely, which can be costly. So I think that service that you offer to clients is a really great one. So I could talk to you all day about your business, but I want to change tact a little bit. And just, I'm wondering, what is the best piece of advice that you've been given in your career?
The best piece of advice I've been given in my career, I think, is from a former business partner of mine. And it was really around the value of your people in the organisation. I was talking to, pardon me, a HR consultant the other day, and we were talking about, you know, the SME space, and there are plenty of businesses that have, 50 to 100 employees and don't have a HR function.
Yeah.
And a lot of businesses much smaller than that don't even think twice about it.
Mm.
We've really built this business around the idea that if we support our employees, look after our people, they'll look after the clients.
Mm.
I'm a big believer in the Branson line, train them so they can, leave, treat them so well that they won't.
Yeah.
But if you look after your people, you get it back in spades. So that investment in people, and investment's, I guess, a bit of a cold term, but if you have genuine working relationships with your teammates, then I think the sky's the limit. So
Yeah,
absolutely.
Good advice. Now, I'm really passionate about busy, and I'm wondering, do you subscribe to being busy?
We'll probably have to define our terms. You're talking to a lawyer, Jules. So. I loved your book, and I think there's real lessons to be taken from, real benefit from just analysing what we think busy is and what busy does to our brains.
Mm.
Because I don't think there's a business owner or operator out there that doesn't have a million things to do.
Yeah.
Giving yourself time and space to do some creative thinking around the challenges you face in your business can be a much better way of spending your time than hammering out 20 quick, reactive, burst emails, being the person who, I don't know, makes the most sales in a month or something. And I think as you mature as a business person, you begin to understand that, you're much better off. It sounds obvious, but, delivering on those high value elements of your business and perhaps letting some of the other stuff go that might otherwise distract you.
Yeah, yeah. And from knowing you, I think you do navigate busy really well. So you're a glowing example. Yes.
From time to time.
Yeah. Oh, we can all get caught up in it, but I think overall you do it really, really well. Now, my final question for you, Rob, is what is the difference that you are striving to make, not only in business but, overall in your life?
Yep. For sure. I think, in business, it's really about changing our industry. Like I said before, the statistics for lawyers around mental health are pretty abysmal.
Mm.
And I don't think it's that difficult to change it up. And, a lot of lawyers and a lot of firms are having these conversations around, the importance of mental health.
Mm.
I think there's fundamental changes need to be made. And I'm not alone. I mean, we've had, this year, a couple of high-profile magistrate suicides. They've cited workload and stress, in their suicide notes and whatever. So, this isn't news to anyone. But it's about changing the culture of our industry. Mm. I think is really important. And on the personal front, I want to make life better for myself and my team, so we can do all the other things that are important to us, whether it's around family or friends or whatever. So.
Yeah, and you're the father of two little girls, and I know that you are very pro women in your business. I think you've got quite a balanced workforce as well, so improving that diversity. For them to have better lives, too.
Yeah, well, just recently we had a female Prime Minister, we got a female Chief Justice of the High Court, and, the best thing about my kids is I've mentioned these things to them when they happen, and the kids are like, yeah, well, of course. And I'm like, that's a pretty good reaction,
I think,
from young girls that they sort of take it for granted in a way.
Yeah. Rob, thank you so much for being part of the podcast today, and I'm really grateful, and I know many out there will be really grateful in you sharing the details about your business model and the culture you're creating, which is fantastic. And I love that you're so passionate about really supporting the mental health of your employees and really creating that ripple effect of change there. And also working to create, to change the culture within your industry. But of course, that's also going to have a ripple effect of change. And from people listening to what you've created, you know, they can do the same thing too. So as you said, you know, nothing's impossible. So people can do this. And I know that a lot of small business owners out there find it quite challenging in terms of the people space, and hearing what you're doing can absolutely help them in creating what they want to create. And I just want to thank you for your generosity and your time. So I know it is quite scarce, and I'm very lucky to get a slot in your diary. So Rob, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Julie.
Thanks for listening. And I hope that you have gained some great ideas and feel inspired to get out there and make what you do count for your leadership, your business, and your life. Please do leave a review for this podcast, and please share it with your network. Send any feedback or suggestions for future guests by emailing me, julie@juliehyde.com.au. For now, let's get out there and make it count.